Can you take just a brief moment and describe the difference between functional medicine and traditional healthcare?
Functional medicine, you're talking about health and wellness. When you're talking about traditional medicine, you're looking at sickness and disease. What I mean by that, when you go to a doctor, a traditional medical doctor, he's going to look at you like you have a disease or a sickness, and they're going to treat that. Where a functional medical doctor would basically say, well, you have this problem, but what you can do is you can treat it naturally and not need medications or anything else like that. And if you look at it, you know, there are only principles of health and wellness. There's no principles of sickness and disease. So when a doctor's treating you for sickness and disease, there's no rhyme or reason what they're going to do except just to try to eradicate the symptom. And the symptom is a warning sign by the body to tell you, like, there's a problem going on. You can't ignore the symptom.
Are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. From the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what? I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Oh, and welcome back to The Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having on the line Dr. James Keimer. Are you there, Dr. James?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. I know we were talking a couple of days ago before we got on the interview. You are in South Florida right now, is that right?
Correct.
Nice. And Palm Beach
Gardens, Florida.
Nice. We just drove into Florida from, where were we before? We were in Tennessee. So we're in up near Daytona right now, but we'll be
nice.
Florida all year. So been enjoying the wonderful Florida spring weather that's around here.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. I think people are afraid of Florida summers, and Florida summers are like my favorite. So yeah. I like it here. So what I want to do before we get too far into the interview is just do a brief bio for you, which I've got my notes over here for you. And you are the founder of, or you're a doctor of chiropractic and founder of, I'm going to mispronounce it, SEMA. I always want to say Keimer because of the C. So SEMA Health. And you've been running that for almost, you said 50 years, is that right?
Well, we started in 1980.
So
we're going off 45 years.
Very nice. So I know you have a really unique sort of value proposition in the world of health. And so what I want to start off with is, what is it that you guys are known for? What's your business like? Who do you serve? What do you do for them?
Well, actually, what we do right now, it's more of we want an eclectic approach to treatment. So we kind of blended at this particular point, traditional medicine with functional medicine. Mm-hmm. And traditional medicine is obviously medications and surgery, and functional medicine is more on the health and wellness side. And at certain times, Rich, you need both. And there are times when one will do better than the other, but the reality is that once you're being treated from a traditional approach, if you're taking any kind of medication, you'd be preferably, if you get off the medication and just do everything natural through proper nutrition, proper exercise, proper treatment of the human body, and also help people learn about how they can educate their mind and program their mind for success.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what we want to do, and that's what we've created at this particular point.
Can you take just a brief moment and describe the difference between functional medicine and traditional healthcare?
Yo, functional medicine is... You're talking about health and wellness. When you're talking about traditional medicine, you're looking at sickness and disease. What I mean by that, when you go to a doctor, a traditional medical doctor, he's going to look at you like you have a disease or a sickness, and they're going to treat that. Where a functional medical doctor would basically say, well, you have this problem, but what you can do is you can treat it naturally and not need medications or anything else like that. And if you look at it, you know, there are only principles of health and wellness. There's no principles of sickness and disease. So when a doctor's treating you for sickness and disease, there's no rhyme or reason what they're going to do except just to try to eradicate the symptom. And the symptom is a warning sign by the body to tell you, like, you know, there's a problem going on. You can't ignore the symptom. It's like you know, if your oil light comes on in the car, you don't go into a gas station and the guy says, okay, just pop the oil light out so you won't see it anymore. So go on and drive with your car. You're going to damage the car. And that's what goes on with the medical, you know, procedures. They're kind of like, they're good for, let's say, a temporary situation where if, you know, you got into a car accident or you had some kind of bad infection or some kind of bad reaction and you need emergency care, absolutely. But then when it comes time to, like, now you go back, you're going to be able to take care of your health. And that's the biggest thing. What I've learned, you know, throughout my life is that without your health, you don't have anything. So having your health is something that's going to be really, really important for everybody, not just to have it for 10, 30, 40 years, but to have it for 80, 90, 100 years. We enjoy the quality and quantity of your life. Right now, people, you can say that actually this year they're living less than they've lived before as far as length of time, longevity, I guess because of the COVID reaction to the society. But at this particular point, the quality of life is really, really, you know, bad for most people. So they're living longer, but the quality is not there. What good is being living in pain or having cancer and heart disease and not being able to enjoy life and living on medications? So that's pretty much the goal, is to like blend both together. And so give people the opportunity to learn about both. I think that's important. And then let the person judge what they want. You know, now it's like, okay, if I need to have one of my patients see one of the doctors in the office, whether it's Dr. Brown, the osteopath, you know, or Dr. Aaron, the medical doctor, at least I can then speak to them about, okay, this is what we have, this is what's going on, what do you recommend? And then give the patient the opportunity to utilize both. Like, for example, somebody comes in with severe pain, it might take a while for them to get into pain, for them to be on pain medication, anti-inflammatories, do it. And if you feel that what's going to help you, then if it's going to, that's good. And so this way, at least we go from anti-inflammatories back into a good treatment with the patient, physical therapy, whatever it is, and exercise, and have the patient brought back to really optimum health.
Yeah, I love that. And I know, like, one of the way I always like to look at it is, like, I know we call our traditional healthcare, we call it healthcare, but I always thought it was sort of misnamed, and it's more like emergency and sickness care, and then functional medicine is healthcare, right? It's
exactly
how to keep yourself healthy.
Well, yeah, healthcare in the way we look at it right now is an oxymoron. There's no health in the care at all, but it's really disease and sickness care. And so when people understand that, that's important. You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, they're going to label you with a disease. You have to figure out what the cause of that disease was, because they never, even though they diagnosed the problem, and this is, it's kind of stupid if you really look at it. In order for a doctor to, you know, determine what's going on with a patient, he has to give them a diagnosis. And the word diagnosis, if you look at it, di means two, agnosis means don't know. There's two people that don't know, the doctor and the patient. So a diagnosis just says, this is a list of symptoms or conditions that this person has. It does not tell you what's causing the problem. It doesn't, like, for example, if you have pain, they'll say, well, okay, I'm going to give you pain medication or anti-inflammatories or muscle relaxants and everything. And so they give you the pain, you know, and muscle relaxants and everything, but you got to keep on taking them because you're in pain. So it's not getting to the cause of the problem. It's just kind of band-aiding. And in actuality, the problem does get worse. And eventually that pain leads to surgery. Whereas if you treat the patient prior to that and get them on some kind of a good exercise program, you get them out of pain, you prevent the surgery from occurring down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you and I were chatting a bit before when we prepped this interview about one of my first experiences with functional medicine. I was trying to put on weight for a long time. And,
yeah,
know,
well,
I was like 120 pounds all the way into my 30s and could never gain weight. And I started working with a functional medicine doctor, and he did, you know, extensive microscopic blood work and genetic therapy and like stuff like that to like look into what my genetics were and food logs and whatnot, and discovered essentially that I don't have a traditional hunger and satiety response and was thus not eating enough and had myself in a catabolic state and wasn't able to put on muscle. And after we fixed the actual root problem, I've been able to gain weight and put on muscle and work with a coach to do that.
Yeah. And the good part about that is, like, you know, what you learn about your body is going to be like, it's going to be life changing for the rest of your life. And so it'll be, you know, it's a great experience, the experience when you did. That's the same thing happened to me with chiropractic. You know, getting out of severe back pain was like, it's just like an eye opener. It's like, this is something I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to help people that have back problems rather than go for surgery, which a lot, most of the times you don't need, you know, you can treat this naturally. Yeah. And so the difference in your life is, you know, from having back surgery compared to not having back surgery and or fusion, if you can get away with it, you save yourself so much pain and suffering for the rest of your life, that, which is going to impact the rest of your life. Yeah. That's the one of the things that I see with my patients too. It's like, they're really happy when they get well and they feel great. It's like you change their life and they know it. They see it. And so it's something.
I want to just give our audience just sort of a feel for like the scope of what you've built with your organization there. Because I know it's not just you guys have a whole host of doctors and a lot of different, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Disciplines. So Like, how big is your organization and what sort of disciplines do you guys cover? Because you guys cover both sort of the sickness care and the functional medicine care and several other areas, right?
Yeah, we pretty much cover everything. You know, at this particular point, as far as doctors go, we have, I think, about 12 physicians on staff, medical doctor, an osteopath, doctor of physical therapy, and I think 7 or 8 chiropractic physicians. And then we have the staff of therapists that also work on the patients as well, and trainers for them to do any rehab or personal training with our patients. We have a full gym, so patients can eventually just, you know, join the gym once they, you know, they're out of pain and do whatever they want to do. They can work out on their own. They can get a trainer, or they can work out with us. We have different classes for them. As far as all the other, we have like all kinds of physical therapies, from massage work, neuromuscular work. We do cranial work, which is working with the cranium. Most people don't even know what that is, or TMJ work. We do a lot of work with like reflex work with organs. And so that's from the functional medicine approach. We use blood chemistry analysis to determine diet, what kind of diet patients should be on. And then we look at it from a perspective of what organs and glands are weak. For example, if you're a diabetic, you're going to need to have a different kind of a diet and nutritional support for the pancreas, or nutritional support for whatever's causing the problem with blood sugar. So we look at the body as a whole. And so on top of that, we can also use with the medical doctors, they can do stem cells, and which we do too as well. And they do PRP, which is an injection of their own blood, okay, protein-rich plasma in their blood, so we can inject it into actually different joints to help see if it can heal the joint itself as well. They also do it with skin. We also have estheticians in the office, which work with all different kinds of skin conditions and help, especially with in the wrinkle department, or some women just don't like the way they're aging with facially, and we can help them with that too as well. So we do a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, and, so you built an incredible organization for that. And you said you've been doing this since 1980. I want to hear, and we talk on this show all the time about your origin story, right? You know, every good comic book hero has an origin story, and it's the thing that made you into the hero you are today. And we want to, you know, hear that story. Were you born a hero, or were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to start a large functional medicine practice? Or did you start in a job and eventually move to become an entrepreneur? Basically, how did you get here?
What had happened was, you know, going through, if I just go back a little bit to my childhood, I grew up in New York and in a lower middle income area, which was fine. It was all family oriented. I grew up around a lot of Catholic, Polish, German, Italian, Irish, English, you name it. And then we also had, you know, other neighborhoods around us, because New York at that time was a big melting pot. So we had, you know, Black neighborhoods, Puerto Rican neighborhoods. I eventually moved over to a neighborhood that was predominantly Jewish. So I got to learn about all different kinds of cultures and all different kinds of people. That was good, because you just learned a lot about people. And so growing up in New York, it was tough. It was, you got to get into fights all the time. It wasn't like, you know, if you were going to get into a fight, you were going to get into a fight. So you had to learn to really protect yourself. You wound up, you know, hanging out with a whole bunch of guys that you would consider like a gang, but you were like more of a brotherhood to just help support or protect you from other gangs in the area. So we kind of grew up around that kind of stuff. And some of the people that were around, the older guys, some of them were really crazy. One of them, I remember, I'll never forget this, but I was great friends with his younger brother, and he wound up with 2 other guys who wound up, you know, shooting the off-duty police officer with a shotgun because he was trying to stop him from printing. They were trying to rob a supermarket. So I kind of grew up around that kind of stuff. That terrified me. I didn't want anything to do with that. There were gang wars in the neighborhood. That would kind of get me really nervous as a kid. But as I grew older, you know, I felt like, you know, school was a good way for me to go. And I always fairly did well in school. My mother literally forced me, make sure I did my homework, make sure I did all these different things. Otherwise, I would have just been hanging out with my friends. So as I got into high school, I was graduating. My mother said, well, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. Maybe I want to be a mechanic. I didn't really think of anything else at the time. I kind of liked cars, and I felt like that'd be something, you know, that we'd do. But I also, at the time, the Vietnam War was going on. And even if I once I got out of school, I'd be reclassified 1A. You go right into the military, right over to Vietnam. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. That's where you're going. So my mother says, why don't you think about college? So I said, okay. We went to meet with my grade advisor, and he was a nice Italian fellow. I forget his name, but he looked at my high school records. I was probably maybe a C-minus, D-plus student. I studied in school, but I didn't study. I didn't really care too much about it. I was more interested in maybe playing golf and hanging out with my buddies and stuff and my girlfriend. So he said to me, he looks at my records, and he says to my mother and I, he goes, your son's not college material, Mrs. Seema. And I kind of looked at him, and my mother looked at him. She says, I don't care. I want him to go to school. That was my mother. So he goes to me, he goes, well, what do you like? And I told him, I said, well, I like animals. He goes, would you want to be a vet? So I said, that sounds like a good idea. So he goes back to the filing cabinet. There was no computer at the time. He's rumbling through the files, and I don't know how many files he goes through. He finally goes, he picks one file. He goes, Mrs. Seema, there's one school your son might be able to get into. And it was an agricultural school. It was a two-year school. And I said, okay, fine. I'll go. He said, well, you have to pass an aptitude test. So somehow, to this day, I don't even know how I passed it, but I did pass it. So once I went to college, Rich, at that particular point, I said, you know what? I'm sick and tired of being like nobody. I have no direction. I didn't know where I was going. I said, now I have some kind of direction. I said, I'm going to try to be the best doctor I can possibly. I'm not just going to go to school and just be somebody. I just want to go there and work as hard as I can and do the best I can. So that's the way I went to college. And I just went in there with this attitude. I'm going to study. I'm going to start working, you know, really good at getting good grades and all the rest. And so from there, within 2 years, I had my college grades up to matriculate to Cornell University. So now I'm in Cornell, and now I'm in like another echelon of, you know, people that have, you know, a great amount of intelligence and really smart. And they're always, you know, these people were like, it's like being in the class with the guy in the class you call the brain. Everybody in the class was the brain. I was kind of like, well, where are you? So, but I studied hard, worked really hard. I learned, developed really good study habits. That was a real key thing that I was lacking before. And I got up to a point where I graduated in the top 25% of my class from Cornell. And I said, oh, this is fantastic. I said, you know, a guy from going from not being college material to graduating from an Ivy League school, it's pretty good, you know, especially for a kid coming from my background. Because all my friends, they were either wound up, well, either in jail, policemen or firemen or whatever else, or you know, started their own businesses. But very few ever went to college, because during that time frame, you didn't go to college. You just, you know, you were going to do what you were going to do once you graduated high school. Usually college wasn't the way to go. So it was nice for me to realize, like, okay, I came from that crazy neighborhood, and I still remain friends with a lot of my friends that are still alive. And it's like we always laugh about all the crazy things we did. I can't believe we did them, but we did. But that was what made me. And so when I made that commitment, I just went through with it, got through Cornell, was now applying to vet schools. And at the time, it was getting really tough because the war was raging. Everybody and their mother was applying to medical or vet school because they did want to be reclassified as 1A, because you know, right into the service, right to now. So I'm teaching at the time. And before that, I had developed bad back pain from the age of 15, shooting a shotgun. And I wound up going into really bad bouts where I couldn't get off the floor. And, you know, then I'd be okay. And then I'd get bad bouts, I couldn't get out of bed. And then I'd be okay. But it kept on coming and going. Even when I was in college, I kept on going to the medical, you know, centers, you know, for the students to see if there was anything they can do. It's, no, don't do this, just take some high compress, you'll be fine. So as I graduated from college and I was teaching, it went out again, and it was really bad. So I was at my girlfriend's house, and her father's friend, gruff Italian guy, comes walking over to me. And he goes, what's wrong with you? And I said, he could see me. I was wenching. I said, I'm in severe back pain. And he goes, don't worry, it's going to get worse as you get older. And he steps over to me and he walks out the front door. And I'm kind of looking at him. And I'm kind of like, I don't know if I should be upset or like, I said, you know what? He's right. I'm 23, 24 at the time. And I'm like, what am I going to do when I'm 34? It's getting worse. What am I going to do when I'm 44 if I'm still alive? And so I spoke to one of the teachers and she said, you ever go to a chiropractor? I didn't know what a chiropractor really did. I thought it was a foot doctor. And I said, no. When I learned about chiropractic, I went to a chiropractor and started to feel better. I said, I'm going to chiropractic school. Because if you can help somebody with my problems, to me, it was a gift from God. If I can do that for somebody else. So here I am. I went right out to, you know, chiropractic college. And I graduated probably in the top 5% of my class. I'd say maybe number one in my class of about 80, 90 students. If it was based on scholastic, and also practical, yeah, I'd probably be number one because I worked that hard. So once I get out of the school, as I was getting out, I saw a quote from Thomas Edison about the doctor of the future. And he said, the doctor of the future prescribed no medication, but anticipations in diet, care of the human frame, the cause and prevention of disease. And I said, that's what I'm going to be. That was the first time in my life where I felt like I totally identify with that kind of doctor. And so, but there was no course, there was no books, there was no nothing. There was like a nice quote, okay, with some kind of direction to follow. But I said, that's what I want to be. So that's what I focused on. I focused on diet, nutrition, the physical body, the cause of prevention of disease, and just kept on modifying and altering my, you know, just good, just not just, you know, for my patients, I was doing it more for me. I mean, if this stuff had to work on me. And so, throughout the years and the decades, it was a great experience because I saw, like, you know, what things were right, what things were wrong, what constituted excellent health, what didn't, because I had to write the book. If I want to be a doctor of the future, this is interesting too, is because, you know, it's like, yeah, you're trying to be something that's in the future. How do you be a futuristic, whatever? You know what I mean? To me, that was like kind of weird, but I said, I didn't care. It's like, I'm going to do it because I know I can do it. So I wound up spending, you know, 40 some odd years. Look, because you're going through research and at the same time you're working on patients and at the same time, you're no spring chicken anymore. You're not 25, 28, 29. You know, you passed 50, 60, 70 a long time ago. So it's like, you know, this is, it goes really quick. And so you have to really modify and make sure your health and wellness is there because you're not going to get there, that thing. So to me, it was like wide open and I had to write that more for me than even my patients. But obviously, it was really great because it helped, you know, dictate the course of my whole life. And I did what I said I was going to do. I created the courses. I created books, not just for the doctors, but for the lay people as well. And so to me, it's like at this point in my life, my goal was more to like get this stuff out to the world now because it's needed. I mean, the medical establishment right now is not doing a really good job of treating. They don't treat health and wellness. So they're not doing a good job with it at all. There's no job they're doing with it. So yeah, to blend both of them. And a lot of doctors today are a lot more open-minded to natural alternatives.
That's awesome. That's a pretty incredible story. You've been, you know, everywhere from gang wars in New York to, you know, graduating multiple different colleges and building a pretty impressive both career and organization over, you know, the course of your life. That's it's an impressive story for anyone who's, you know, doesn't really matter where you start from. You can build something that is valuable to the world. So that's really cool. What I want to talk about next is I want to talk a little bit about like what you think your superpower is that you've developed over the course of this long storied career. We talk about on this show, every iconic hero has a superpower, right? Whether that's your fancy flying suit or your super strength, right? In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or you developed over the course of your career that really energize all of your other skills. So what do you think in your practice now, as you've grown this organization, what your superpower is that you bring to bear?
You have to have, well, I'll go this way first, because this is really quick. I don't know if we spoke about this the other day, but you ever hear, it's an equation. It's a integral equation. It's B-E plus do, and you score, put a line underneath that, and you have.
Yeah.
So it's basically, it's really a scale of what they call livingness. At any one time, just like we're doing right now, you're being something, you're doing something, and you're having something. In life, all those three things have to be congruent. So when I say to people, I say, you know, what does it take to be wealthy? They always tell me, well, you have to have a lot of money. And I said, if you look at that B plus do equals have, or the senior to everything is B, then do, then have. So in order to like really enjoy life, okay, you have to be something that you truly, really want to be. That's your purpose. That's who you are. And so once you really know who you are, what it is that you really want to be, like, and it's not just you're going to be just one thing. You know, like I feel like I have a superpower because I know a lot about my health. But that was from being and doing the things to have my health. People, so if you really want to be wealthy, you have to be in your mind wealthy immediately. It's not a question of like you're going to think about it. This is who you are. And you're going to do the things that you're going to be that make you a wealthy person, and you're going to have wealth. And it's the same thing with my marriage. I have to be a spouse to my wife, and I have to do the things the spouse would have to do to have a wonderful marriage. And after 44 years of marriage, I can say that, yeah, we have a great marriage. And it, you know, is it like, you know, every day it's like, you know, happy-go-lucky? No, but it's like, we know everything that we really know need to know about each other, and we work together as a team. So, I mean, that's my superpowers, and I learned to develop a purpose in my life. And then, you know, the other thing that you want to do is like, once you have your purpose, the purpose is your burning desire. You know, it's basically, if you look at the definition of purpose, is the result that's intended to desire, which means that you are already being that person as soon as you say that. So the minute I said, I want to be the doctor of the future, that was it. It was like, there was nothing that was going to stand in my way. The only thing that was going to stand in my way was me, and which is the next thing I had learned, which is commitment. And commitment is something that, you know, once you really, truly love what you're being, okay, because when you were a kid, you were growing up, what did they say? Rich, what'd you want to be? Okay. Some people, I want to be president. I want to be a police officer. Whatever it is you want to be, you're happy. But then 30 years later, they don't even ask you what you want to be. It's like, well, what you be? And they go, well, what do you do for a living? It's like, what? That totally changed. It's like, you know, you need to be something first. Then you'll do what you want to do. And then you'll have what you want to have. So whether it's with marriage, whether it's with, you know, your profession, whether it's with your health, you know, whether it's with, you know, getting along with other people, whatever it is, your relationships, you know, you have to be that person first, and you'll do all the things necessary to have the relationship that you want to have. So that commitment factor is really strong, you know, and a commitment is, and the fact I heard commitment said in a way that really made me understand what commitment really was. I was listening to this pastor one time, and he was talking about love and marriage. And so I'm listening to her, and I was maybe married 12, 15 years at the time. And he says, people think that love is a feeling. He says, because you can love somebody, and 2 days later, you can hate them for whatever they did to you. So he says, that's not true love. Love is a commitment perpetuated by action.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I said, well, that's exactly what it is, because, you know, the day I signed, you know, my marriage papers to my wife, I was committed to her, and she was committed to me. And it was just, you remain committed by perpetuating the action of two married people. You don't say, I'm going to marry you, and I'm committed to you, or I love you, and then 2 weeks later, you're cheating on her. That's not love. That's not a really definition. I mean, that's lust. That's nothing to do with love. So, you know, when I start to realize that, you know, you're going through it, and your children see it. And so each one of my children right now, they're happily married. We have, like I said, at this point, well, we have number 10 on the way, probably have another one or two more, but it's like, you know, all my kids, they all get along great. All their children get along great. The cousins get along great. The spouses get along great. They all get along. It's like just one big happy family. And that's what we perpetuated. It was that kind of a situation that we wanted. And so it was like, you know, I was never going to let my marriage fail. I was just too committed to that. I would never let my, you know, children down ever. Okay, and when they see dads that don't like do things right for their children, and I'm not talking financial stuff, but I'm just talking about like, you know, staying with them and making sure that their life is like worth living and, you know, being in touch with your another. It's like the kids, the grandkids, they don't even talk to them. It's like, I have patients, they tell me, when was the last time you saw your dad? I don't talk to him. It's like, it's horrible. You don't see the grandkids? No. I would die if I couldn't see my grandkids.
Yeah, I resonate a lot with the Be Do Have stuff you talked about. We actually use that in a lot of our course education, because anytime you want to achieve something, you have to start with the identity, right? If you want to make a change in your life, you have to make a shift in your identity first, right? That's the B portion, and your identity determines the actions that you take. And that's the do. And so then the actions that you take determine the results that you get, which is the have. And so, because we do instructional design a lot, which is helping, experts build their persuasive teaching. And so we actually start and end all of the courses that we help someone build with the be do have, right? So what's the person?
It's perfect.
The beginning and the end. And so that really resonates with that. And it, you're right, it ties a lot into the commitment, because you can't get into the commitment aspect of the doing part if you don't have the identity first, right? You won't commit to work. You won't commit to the actions that you have to take if you don't have the identity that goes with it.
Yeah, because my identity was the doctor of the future. It was like, that's me. That's who I want to be. I don't want to be anything else. That's what I want.
Yeah, and that's how you end up with an organization that is sort of straddling that line and helping people with their sickness and their functional health and everything, sort of like the whole thing. It's like, hey, this is what healthcare should look like, is taking care of the whole person.
And that's like my, that's what keeps on pushing me, because it's just like I'm seeing it more and more and more and more with my kids and my grandkids. And it's just, and now I'm starting to see it even with a lot of the people in the general public right now. They're kind of like sick and tired of like this COVID crap and all the other stuff and vaccinations and all the stuff that, people lost relatives during that time, weren't able to see them. People were dying. They didn't know what was causing anything. They didn't know if the vaccinations were creating all these issues. But nobody ever really taught anybody about taking care of their health. It's like, every day people were locked in their houses. I was in central business, so I was open. But they were locked in their houses. And I'm like, wouldn't it be nice if the government would have like shows on all day long, teaching people like Jack LaLanne used to do in your living room, show you like how to exercise, how to do this. This is what you should do for eating to help improve your immune system. These are things you can do, like the be do have. Since you're home right now, you can't be at work. How could you still be the person you want? All these, they never did any of that stuff. They just vaccination, or take this and take that, but nothing like, concrete where you can be working with the people. Most of them are home. They're worried. They're concerned. You're not making them more, less concerned or less worried by making them scared to death, because every time you throw on the TV, there's more and more people dying. There's more and more people It was just all negative. The damage they created with the general public is amazing.
And the thing that always struck me is like we didn't know this at the time because we didn't know a lot about the disease when it came out, but just like anything else, if you are healthy and fit and are taken care of, your body can handle disease and sickness. And so we saw that play out in the disease, that people who were healthy and fit didn't have nearly the reaction or the problems with the disease that people who had, I think the popular term for it is comorbidities, right? Which is just like you weren't healthy in some way. And so right back to your primary like idea for life is if you have a strong, healthy, fit body, then you can survive things like a pandemic or, anything else, right?
Well, I'll tell you my story, okay? We were essential in Florida, so we were able to stay open and practice. And so we sent out emails and texts to all our patients. We're open if you want to come in. If you feel like uncomfortable, you can wear your mask. You can wait until we have a room ready for you. We were doing this, doing that, everything that we would do to help people feel comfortable, okay? So now, germs and bacteria, I've learned this since 1973, don't cause disease. They never did, never will, because they did, we'd all be dead. So, but they're involved with the disease process. And I always, just like you, I always know with a strong immune system. Now, I know you don't know me, but every patient or every person through the course of a day, I wish there were some people around me that would tell you this, is that I hug everybody. Whether you wear a mask, you don't. And by the way, I told my patients, if you want to see me, I don't wear a mask. And if you do walk in with a mask, they ask you why you're wearing a mask. And so that's how I went through everything. So after a year and a half with the pandemic, I wound up, but I had to go, my youngest daughter was getting married in Italy. I was just at the very end of the pandemic. So I had to go and get what the hell the kid was to see that he didn't have any COVID or whatever it was. Anything active, who was a swab they had you do. So at the time I said, I'm going to do a blood test. I'm going to do a COVID test with it. Okay. Because I said, I had come in contact, Rich, maybe 100, 150 people, direct contact with people who had COVID, okay, over like a two-year time frame. So at least that many people. And so when I did my COVID test, what they do is they measure the amount of antibodies that your body produces. So they only measure up, I think it was like for each, I forget what the amount of blood was, but it was like a 2,500 antibodies. They wouldn't go higher than that. They would just say it was higher than that. And that's what my antibodies were, higher than that. So I knew that it was my body just fought that stuff off. Your body can kill any virus out there, any virus. It produces antibodies, and it produces at least 15 billion different types, or 10 to the 22nd power. That's the number I heard before, which I have no idea what that number is. That's astronomical. And there's only 320,000 different viruses. So you can kill every one of those viruses a billion times over. So it's like you said, if your immune system is strong, you're fine. And people don't realize their whole body is an immune system. Their skin is an immune system. Their kidneys is an immune system. Their liver, their spleen, their thymus, their thyroid, their lymphatics. Everything is that their blood supplies. It's just, it's all basically kind of flushing all toxins and poisons out of the body constantly. So as long as your immune system is functioning well, it has no problem killing anything and everything. In fact, most virus and bacteria, most people don't realize this, there's 40 trillion bacteria on and in your body right now. There's 40 to 400 trillion different virus on and in your body right now. A lot of them work symbiotically with the body. They don't just, they basically help. Look, your body's breaking itself down every day. Certain bacteria and virus feed off the dead tissue to basically help, you know, say, remove it from the body.
Yeah.
So as long as that tissue that's breaking down, remember we were talking about catabolism and anabolism before? Okay.
Yeah.
As long as your anabolic state is better than your catabolic state, then you're not breaking down a lot of damaged tissue. You follow? So the bacteria and virus, if they're feeding off of that or they're helping some other way symbiotically, they're not like they're having enough tissue to basically just get by with. And that's what the body wants. And if there's anything, if there's more bacteria, body will just kill them.
Yeah.
And that's the way the body works. So it's your immune system's great. So we always were working with patients, you know, treating their immune system, either with supplementation, the proper diet, and then also I do, like I said, a lot of treatment with a lot of glands and organs in the body. So depending on which liver, if it was your liver, we can do liver therapy. This is called reflex work, neuromuscular reflex. Actually, somatovisceral reflex work, that's what it's called. But it's a work to stimulate organs and glands in your body to help heal themselves.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've always found fascinating. Like the more you actually look into health and wellness and like how your body actually works, you're like, oh, you know, we've got all sorts of viruses, all sorts of bacteria that are essential to your body functioning. And then you learn that like your body actually rebuilds every organ and skin cell and like thing in your body over the course of, you know, everything's a little different for the time frame, but like your body can fix anything.
Yeah, 6 months to a year, the body repairs and rebuilds its whole cell, but it builds itself on the, you know, the past cells. So if you can keep on getting your cells better and better, then you're going to, you know, improve your overall health. So as you go on in the, I like to call it the aging process, more of like it's a maturing process. If you watch a human being go through, you know, different phases of their life, they start with, they're maturing. Then all of a sudden we're aging. No, you continue on maturing. You don't age. You know, age is just kind of like a number that you just put on somebody. It depends on how your body's matured. Your body has the capability, and I will say this, scientists say it, cells in your body have the capability of living for 150 years. And they do say that people in their 80s that do pass, there's a good, I think it's 20-30% of their body cells are that of a 35-year-old. So there are cells that continue to basically act like they're 35 years old. So time has got nothing to do with it. It's just like how the body repairs and rebuilds itself. And if you continue on keeping it in an anabolic state as opposed to a catabolic state, if you can maintain anabolism, then you maintain health. So you kind of mature on the vine instead of right over there.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you mentioned Jack O'Lane, right? He was 96 years old and swam in the English Channel, right? And it's not like a fantastical thing. That is a human potential that any of us can live up to if we take care of our bodies properly.
Well, he did feats of strength that were phenomenal. He did, at his 69th birthday, shackled with his wrists and his ankles, towed 69 dinghies with one person in each dinghy, 1 mile.
It's crazy.
Each time,
I don't think it was the English Channel. I think it was like somewhere in San Francisco. He did it underwater, okay? He swam the whole thing underwater. I mean, not, he had tanks, these two huge tanks on his back, you know, for oxygen, but underwater he swam the whole, like, it was like the English Channel, something like that. He was phenomenal. He was a great man.
It's proof of what the human body is capable of, right?
Well, that's what that was his goal. He was a chiropractor. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
He was a chiropractor. His daughter was a chiropractor. You know, he attended physical fitness and nutrition. And, you know, that was another guy. I mean, I followed him when I was like 9 years old. If I stayed home from school for whatever reason, he'd be on TV every day. He was on TV for 32 years. Rich, it's amazing. Yeah. It's like, you know, that's the staying power he had. And he created the whole wellness industry, the gyms and stuff. He was one of the first physical cultures to have a gym. And that was back in the 30s. So that was his purpose was he was a sickly kid, okay? And then eventually realized like how nutrition was starting to help him. And then he started to go into nutrition and got into exercise. And he developed all kinds of exercise equipment. The leg extension he developed. Smith machine, he developed. Smith machine is one of my best. I love the Smith machine. I never knew he was the one who developed it until like a few years ago. But he was my idol back then, you know, with his leotards on and his like perfect physique. It was just like unbelievable watching this guy do these things. And just a nice person. So it was really cool. I'll tell you a quick story. The other night we went out to an Italian restaurant. It's called Romeo and Juliet's. It was kind of like it's in a beautiful area, the Cuesta of Florida. But it was in like a commercial park type area. And you get this little rinky-dink Italian restaurant, but you got Bentleys parked outside of it. The food is like phenomenal. It's the first time we ever went. And we got reservations. It was late. It was like 8:30. I usually don't eat that late, but we had to go to my granddaughter's. She had a cherry meat. So a gymnastic meat, excuse me. And so we got there, and we were the last people to leave. And so the woman who was, and it was a small place, maybe 15, 20 tables, but the food was unbelievable. So by the time we're ready to leave, everybody's gone. So it was over there and she's talking to me. And it's funny because when I first got there, I said to her, I said, do you have restrooms? She goes, yeah. She goes, go outside on the lawn. I said, excuse me? She says, yeah, on the lawn. I said, well, which lawn? Mr. Wisley, you got a male or a female? So she goes, no, the restroom's over there. So at the end of the night, she started a conversation with me. She goes, you know who you remind me of? I said, no, who? She goes, Jack LaLanne. I said, get out of here. I said, he's my idol. She says, no. She says, I met him back in the, I guess it was back in the 70s. That's when he was doing that thing with the pulling the 69 dinghies. And she says, yeah, he'd always be with the kids, talking to the kids, talking about nutrition, showing them how to exercise, do this, do that, do this. And one of the women that were with me, I trained her, you know, she's a good friend of ours. And she goes, yeah, he had people leaning on the tree to do push-ups. And I had this woman leaning on, like, the Smith machine doing the same push-ups. So, and she goes, yeah, that's what doctor has us do. So it was really great to even feel like that. And to me, it was like, you know, that was, like, the biggest compliment anybody can ever give me because that's who you want to be. You want to be that kind of person.
Everyone has their own personal hero, right? Someone who you look up to that you helps
you. He was one of them. He was one of them, big time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I want to flip gears a little bit and talk a little bit about your fatal flaw, right? Just like every Superman has his kryptonite or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad. You probably have something that's held you back as you've grown your business and your organization over the last, you know, 30 years. Something you struggled with. For me, I struggled with perfectionism for a long time. Still do sometimes where I'm like, I don't want to ship something until I can get it just right. But I think more important than what is it that you struggled with is how have you worked to overcome it so you could continue to grow this organization that you put together?
You know, a lot of it is like the perseverance. You know, you just have to, you know, it's, to me, I think if I had to look at my flaw, I think I push myself too much.
Yeah.
You know, even at this particular point, like I said, we're opening up something in the River State College. We discussed that before, correct?
We did, but we haven't discussed it on the interview. So if you want to tell us a little bit about what that program is.
Because I'll kind of give you an idea of where I'm going now, because my wife keeps on telling me and a lot of my patients, it's like, you know, don't teach more, treat less. So, I love to teach. I love to teach doctors. I love to teach, you know, lay people. It doesn't really matter. I just love to stand up and get people excited about their life and about health and wellness. So that to me, like, you know, turns me on. I push myself like I think too much. I put too much like emphasis, like you with the perfection. And it's like, you know, you want things to go. The good thing is, as I'm maturing, instead of aging, what's going on is that I'm starting to realize, like, go slower. You're doing everything in your power. You're doing everything that you can do. And just, you know, stop, get, you know, enjoy it more. I always to push myself, Richard, to the point like where it's like you come home and you're stressed. You know, you come home and you're like stressed and you're stressed. And I got through that a while ago. And so it's a lot easier now. But now it's like, you know, enjoy it more. Just have fun. My son gets stressed. I give him all the stress. He loves it. And he complains to me about the stress. And I tell him, I say, you wanted it. So, but anyway, it's kind of like, you know, that's, I just want to make everything go nice and slowly. And my goal now is, and it's one of the reasons why I'm on the podcast, is to like start to educate a lot of people that I can never reach, you know, by doing it this way. Because I said, I love to lecture. I used to lecture all the time to my patients. And when COVID started, we couldn't do that. So that would be my flaw. But, you know, what's going on now, I realized like, I just have to slow down and like, just like, even though I'm excited about things, other people may not be. So now we're doing this work with Indian River State College. They put together a program, you know, it's for a combination of things for the students. They have a health facility now. We're part of their health facility. And the goal is to basically treat a lot of veterans, a lot of special force, and also a lot of first responders that can't get to the VA hospital down, actually where I am in West Palm. So we're opening up a kind of like a satellite clinic up there. And one of the goals, like I said, is with the veterans. And to get the veterans, when they come back from all this craziness that they're going into, you know, try to get them to establish back into a normal society. So you have to, they have programs on the veteran side to work with them, you know, mentally, and also a lot of physical therapy. And they'll also use us too for treatment, as well as the whole exercise aspect. So they're going to try to get the veteran or the special force guy to go from, you know, that kind of a lifestyle and whatever damage was caused by that lifestyle back into society. So first get them well, you know, mentally, and then get them well physically. And then we also have a part of the organization now that will place them in a different job, a different position that they feel that would basically be the area that they of expertise that they should be in. So it's kind of like, you know, just rehabbing these people back into normal society so they can become successful. I mean, they fought for this country and, you know, you want them to come back and they're like, okay, come back. You can't come back normal. You can't come back the way you left. You know, your whole thought process, the way you think, the way you act is totally different depending on what you saw. So that's really tough. So getting them back into society is really, that to me, that's what I love to do. That's what I like to take those people and say, listen, man, you can do this. And then we're also going to be working with Olympic athletes. They plan on New River State College. There's a lot of, right now they have the high dive team there. And these people are incredible. But they're also looking for a lot of, you know, let's say Olympic athletes that, you know, are mostly summer Olympic type sports. They want to have this complex where we are involved with them too as well. Like the high dive guys, what they hurt most, their wrists. Because they don't go head in no more. It's just always feet first. But if their wrist is traumatized, they have to go for carpal tunnel. But we can treat that. They don't need to go for surgery. And so it's all that. And we have the students there too. We'll be able to treat them. And I have a whole host of patients still already up in an area. So it's going to be a nice thing that we're doing now. And the president of the school, he's a real nice guy. And he wants to do this. If this works really well here, he feels he knows it's going to. He wants to do this through all the campuses in the state of Florida. And so put them was, And there's a ton. There's 160,000 veterans up near Fort Pierce that need support. They need help. And sometimes they have to wait 6 months to a year to go and get help. That's like, look, these people fought for our country. I mean, come on. You got people running across the border. You give them everything that they have, and these people can't get anything.
Yeah. So that's an extension of just what you guys are doing. You're extending it out to, is that a nonprofit wing of the business, or is like the school paying for that?
No. What they're doing is they already met with two generals. Abudi was one of them. I wasn't at the meeting, but they're now going back. They love the idea. They love the idea to do this for veterans and the special force guys and the first responders. And so they go back now and they try to get either some kind of, you know, money or whatever they'll do, that they'll get X amount of dollars that'll pay for the veterans to come for treatment. So
yeah,
that's really cool. And the same thing, they're looking to do the same thing with all the Olympic athletes. They're also looking for funding, okay, whatever they can do. And they usually go to the state. You know, this is they'll go with the generals. I'm sure they're just going to go to the federal government and figure out, you know, what they have to do to put this whole thing together. But they thought it was a great idea that we can have this whole thing together for them.
So that's a whole new growth plan for your business. And so I know we've talked a little bit already about, you know, a common enemy in your business, which is, you know, the sickness industry and your driving force to become, you know, the doctor of the future.
The Hero Show will be right back. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up, though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
I want to talk a little bit about your guiding principles, right? One of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, you know, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever brings them to Arkham Asylum. So as we get to the end of this interview, I want to talk about the top one or two principles that you run your life and this organization by to have the kind of staying power that you're continuing to grow this organization 44 years after its inception.
No, the good thing, one of the things I have to say about the whole organization, everybody loves each other. Everybody cares about each other. That's kind of like when I developed this thing, it was like, I wanted every one of the people that worked in my facility to be like me. Be like me in the way of like caring about people and, you know, they come first and all the rest. But caring about each other too at the same time. So that was my main commitment. I'd say a lot of times when, you know, we do the Google reviews and stuff, I'd say most of the Google reviews is not, Dr. Seba is not a great, you know, he's a great doctor. It's all, the front desk is so nice and these people are so great and they love you and they care about you. I'd rather hear that than like, oh, Dr. Seba is fantastic. So yeah. That's what built the organization. It was like, you know, and always having a staff that cared. You know, that they cared about each other. That was the thing. We always had a lot of meetings. And I wish we had more meetings than we do now. And I plan to have a lot of these meetings too up at the college. But meetings were good because, again, everybody together, everybody was organized, everybody was happy, everybody had bonuses, everybody had goals, everybody had like a position. And when you have a nucleus of people like that, when somebody, Richard, that comes in and thinks they're going to change that ain't happening.
Yeah.
And so that...
So it's a culture of family and love that really just keeps the organization going the way that it's going.
That's it. And it's always been that way. And like I said, I don't walk past any employee and not hug them. Because they know, it's like, I care about you. It's like, you know, we treat our employees, not just, we treat them like with therapy and things like that and nutrition. We help them as much as possible. They're in the gym, you know, during their lunch hour, half the staff on the other side, they're in the gym working out every day. And so it's really great just to see your staff working out, everybody working out together, happy, having fun. And it's just really good. It's really cool to see that.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's a cool principle to build an organization on too. And I know you had mentioned before we got on the interview that your son is starting to take over the operation. So I assume that it's even going multi-generational now.
Oh yeah. No, he wants to do that. Now his goal is to do a whole bunch of, you know, other facilities too as well. So we're going to do the Indian River State College together, but he's got one or two other areas that he's going to start looking at to develop other practices. So he wants to really push that thing. And that's fine with me. So that was one of the things that at one time I thought I'd like to do. But, you know, you just like get caught up in a lot of things. And you're raising a family. You can't just do everything you want to. But it's like now what his vision is would be like what my vision would be. So yeah. It's nice because now it's like having a generation, a few generations of Henry Fords around. You know, eventually you're going to kind of like, you know, build an empire.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to say now.
I always like to think that my goal as a parent is to put my children, their starting point where my ending point was.
Right? Yeah.
It's what like my dad did for me. And so like I can do a lot of things in my life that he wasn't capable of because of how far, you know, him and my mom worked to get us to, you know, our starting point was better than theirs. And, yeah. You know, my sons and my daughters will be better than mine was, and they'll be able to do more. So it's like the same kind of thing, your organization. You built this whole functional medical practice, and he can start with that foundation and then start replicating that everywhere.
Here's a funny part was like, you know, we have these videos. My son couldn't have been more than like 13, 14. He's running around my office with a video camera. We had like 5,000 square foot total gym at the time, maybe a staff of 20, 30. And he's there videotaping patients, talking to them, videotaping the front desk, how you doing today? This is my dad's office, and he's going to the gym and everything, I'm saying. And then he was working with me when he was 15, 13, 14, in the office with me. He was working on some patients. At the time, we had computers, so he was taking notes. And he would walk into the rooms with patients even before I'd go in there. I remember one of my patients got a little bit, like, nervous because she was, like, I think late 60s, early 70s. And she goes, you know, Dr. Sammy, your son's so sweet, but when the 12 or 13-year-old kid comes in, he starts asking me, how am I doing? How am I feeling? She goes, I'm getting a little embarrassed. So I decided to tell my son, I said, James, do me a favor. Just relax a little bit. You're not the doctor yet. But he was like, he grew into that.
Yeah.
You know, when he was a baby, I have pictures of my oldest daughter, who was the other chiropractor in the office. She was adjusting me on my neck when she was maybe 2 years old. I'm laying on the floor. She's got her hands on my neck. So these kids were, you know, brought up with this. I never even knew about chiropractic until I was in my 20s. So for them to see that, it's like, you, now you can believe it. And once you see it, okay, I see it. And now I know it's, and that's what he's doing. He took off right. I mean, he's going to just take this again to another level, which is fine with me.
That's awesome.
And it gives me more time to educate, which I'd rather do now anyway. I'd rather teach.
Awesome. I look forward to seeing what you guys do with the teaching and education as well, because I think, you know, you guys have built a good model that, you know, potentially can, not just you guys can replicate, but other organizations might be able to replicate as well and really create change in the way our health system works. So I like that. Well, I think that's a really good place to wrap our interview, because it's, you know, the principle of life and love and passing it on to your children, I think, is a really good thing. But I do finish every interview with a simple challenge I call the Heroes Challenge. And I do this to help get access to stories we might not otherwise find on our own. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think is a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on the Hero Show?
Okay. I can think of some.
Do you have someone who pops into your head right away?
Actually, let me think about that, because there's one to two people.
Okay. Well, we'll reach out afterwards, see if we can do that. So in comic books, there's always the crowd of people who, you know, are standing around cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So analogous to that is on this show as we close. Where can people find you if they want to come in and see your facility or hear you speak, those kind of things? Where can they light up the bat signal and say, hey, James, I'd love to learn from you. I'd love to, you know, have you help with our health. But I think more importantly than where is who are the right types of people?
Okay. Basically, you can reach me at either SEMA Health or SEMAFunctionalMedicine.com. Both of them. If you go to SEMA Functional Medicine, we're going to be just moving everything over to SEMA Health. But if you go there now, if you go underneath Meet Dr. Sammy, you'll see books available. They can get my both books, PDF versions for free, complimentary. So they can get all the information that they need. But all that stuff is on the site itself right now. We're located in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. It's kind of a beautiful place. You know, it's maybe, he'd say maybe 60 minutes from Fort Lauderdale for people. I'm not sure where that is. I mean, where we are. And it's Palm Beach. That would probably be the easiest way to describe it. And beautiful place. And been here since. Actually, one of the other things I like to tell people is that if you want to be really successful, I mean, besides, you know, finding a purpose in life and marrying the right spouse, if you really, truly want to be successful too, is find out where you want to live. If you want, wherever you want to live, just go live there. I mean, go visit if you have to, but go. I would not move anywhere else in the world. I don't even want to go traveling. To me, it's like I live in paradise. Why would I want to go anywhere else? In fact, the statistic I heard one time is 40% of the world's wealth is found between the months of January to March, anywhere between maybe 20 miles north of me, 30 miles south of me. So it's like
crazy.
Wealthiest people in the world want to be here. Why wouldn't I want to be here? So it's those real, those big things that really find the purpose in life that get you up in the morning, that drives you. As I used to write my books, Rich, I'd get up at like 2 a.m. I'd get this thought in my head, I got to up and write it down, I'll forget it. And I'd write it down, I'd be writing 1 or 2 pages before I finished. And it's just, that's what got you up. Gets me up in the morning on Saturdays and Sundays. It just pushes you. It just gets you out of bed. You can't like think of anything else. And so once you have that kind of purpose and you marry the right person, oh God, it's the world is, you know, your pearl. And and then where you want to live, that's the best part.
If we were to boil it down to 3 major things.
Yeah.
Know your purpose, be do have, marry the that's right it. Person and figure out where that's you want to live. I think I'm well on the way there. And my wife and I, we've spent the last traveling the U.S. and we've landed up in Florida too. Florida is our favorite place in the whole country.
Oh, no, it's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many children do you have?
We have 4. So I've got a...
We long.
Yeah. I got a teenager who's 14 and my youngest one is 5. And, you know, if people who were paying attention probably saw my 7-year-old come stick her head in here because she's trying to get my attention for something. So anyways, I think that's a great place to sort of end our interview. So thank you so much. We'll make sure that the links for Sima Health are in the show notes below. And it's CIMA for those people who are or listen to this on the audio, simahealth.com. And again, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story today, Dr. James. It has been fantastic hearing your story and just seeing what it is that you guys have put together. It's an impressive organization.
Thank you. You'll make sure you'll send me that link to get some other guests too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, perfect. I love that.
Thank you very much, Dr. James.
You're welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv. where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.